In 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 1 through 5, I'm not going to turn there for the sake of time, but Paul is saying to the Corinthians that their zeal toward the contribution toward the saints there in Jerusalem that Paul was collecting had stirred up the brethren in Macedonia. So the Macedonians actually were very excited about participating in this contribution. That word stirred up, or phrase stirred up there, comes from a word that it can also be translated provoked or stimulated into action, roused, excited, motivated, encouraged. It's the same word that we find in Hebrews chapter 10, verse 24, when we are supposed to stimulate one another to love and good works. In that case, it's a good and positive provocation or provoking, a positive stimulation. Because sometimes people need to be provoked and roused into action. They need a good stimulation for that purpose. But this stimulation is not always good, and it's not always positive. In Colossians chapter 3, verse 21, for example, it says there, "Fathers, do not exasperate your children so that they will not lose heart." That word exasperate literally refers to a provoking or a provocation, not to godliness or to something good, but rather to something negative, to anger and bitterness and discouragement. In Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4, we have a very similar passage here. "Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord." So we have not only a warning here, but also a proper instruction. Not this, but that over here. Okay? Don't do this, but this is what you should be doing instead. Now, I am just going to give all benefit of the doubt that there's no one here who is intentionally setting out to exasperate their children. But the fact is, just because that may not be happening intentionally doesn't mean it's not happening. I'll let you decide. You be the judge as to whether this is the case in your situation or not. This word exasperate generally, as I said, means to stimulate. In Colossians 3 and Ephesians chapter 6, we have different Greek words, yet they come to the same conclusion. To cause to anger, to infuriate, to madden, to enrage. That's the meaning in Ephesians 6, verse 4. In Colossians 3, verse 21, exasperate means, again, to stimulate, either to anger or to good, depending on the context. In Ephesians 6, it says, "Don't do this." And in Colossians 3, it says, "Don't do this because of this." In other words, they'll lose heart if you do this negative thing. It's interesting that fathers are being singled out here. In both passages, the context is dealing with authority figures or leadership in the family. And fathers, as authority figures, ought to be fair and just and equitable. They ought to have a balanced perspective and offer a balanced teaching. In other words, they're supposed to lead. But just because fathers are in positions of authority doesn't mean they automatically provide good, wholesome leadership. This has been one of my points all along in this whole series on marriage and family, is we cannot assume that just because a man sires a child that he's automatically capable and learned and gifted in the realm of leadership and responsibility. Fathers need to be trained. They need to be educated first. And there's nothing wrong with us challenging fathers in a respectful, healthy manner and asking them, in essence, are you doing what you're supposed to be doing? Are you doing well? And there's good reason for that. In Matthew 18, verse 6, Jesus says, "Whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to stumble, well, then it would be better if he had a heavy millstone tied around his neck and be cast into the sea to drown." Well, it's a pretty strong language there, a pretty stiff condemnation. And yet, how many children of Christian families once believed in the Lord, but through poor leadership of the father, they lost their faith, they lost their interest, and they lost their hope? That doesn't mean that because a child goes wayward that we automatically implicate the father. It doesn't mean that either. Ultimately, every child, as he becomes an adult and takes on adult responsibilities, he makes his own choices. On the other hand, We, fathers especially, must do everything in our power to avoid being stumbling blocks to our children. We're going to look at five ways here to exasperate a child. It's kind of a tongue-in-cheek approach, obviously, where it's going to look like we're encouraging these ways, and we're not. We're actually saying quite the opposite. But just for the sake of argumentation, let's look at it in this respect. And you say, well, there's more than five ways. Of course there are, but let's look at least five ways, and then we can at least see some patterns here. Number one, fail to be consistent in the administration of rules, justice, rewards, or discipline. Now, having said that, all parents are guilty of this at some time or another, since parenting is often an on-the-job learning process. We've all gone through this. We who are parents, we understand that. And with your first children, you're probably strict and very punctual and very, crossing your T's and dotting your I's as far as taking care of your children. And the second child, you might want to ease up a little bit, right? Because the first child is always the experimental child, and you're trying to do everything right, and then you start to get better as you go along. Well, what we're talking about here in this case, though, is not that. We're talking about laziness and negligence and even spite. In other words, arbitrarily making up or redeciding rules for no good reason. So what we're really dealing with then here is the abuse of authority and the perversion of justice. And that is exasperating to children. If you establish house rules, codes of behavior, expectations for your children, but say you only enforce them when you're angry or out of spite or haphazardly, or you do not enforce them out of sheer neglect, that's what we're dealing with here, is this kind of hit-and-miss approach to what your own house rules are. The fact is, children need boundaries, and parents do not always know the proper placement of those boundaries at first, but they do need to be fair and just in setting and enforcing those boundaries. And the Bible over and over advocates a fair and consistent leadership in this area. It doesn't mean, and I'm saying this for the kids' sake more than anything, it doesn't mean that the parents cannot change their mind or update the rules or alter boundaries. As the children get older, for example, and or as circumstances change, or even special cases arise, well then the parents need to respond to that and modify the rules accordingly. What we're really dealing with here, though, is motive. Once again, laziness, arrogance, even meanness in the form of vengeance and retaliation. So what we need to do then, as parents, is be fair when we're setting boundaries, but also be fair in rewards and the administration of discipline. For example, if Johnny comes home late, his date or whatever it might be, and you give him a lecture or maybe you give him a whipping and so on, the next time, though, he comes home late, you do nothing. What you've just done is you've basically gone to either extreme here. On the one hand, very strict, we're going to enforce this, we're going to adhere to this. On the other hand, it's just like, whatever. That is exasperating to a child there. And if two children who are very close in age do the same misdeed, well, then they ought to have the same kind of punishment or level of punishment. We said in an earlier lesson that not all children respond to the same kind of punishment, so at least the same level of punishment is expected. And same with rewards, the same level of reward if they do well. If you play favorites, though, or show partiality, well, that is exasperating and that is disheartening, and the children cry foul. They say that that's unfair, and they're right. It is unfair. So don't impose the rules only when you feel comfortable doing so. And then at other times, you do nothing. For example, if company is over and the child acts up, we've all been in this awkward scenario. I've been there too. I know what it's like. And what you want to do is just kind of, just let the rules slide for now, and you'll hopefully try to deal with it later or just let this one go. Listen, if your child needs what we might call behavior modification, then you need to do that. And if it's awkward and embarrassing, well, then it's awkward and embarrassing. That's just part of being a parent. Don't shrug off the house rules or the codes of expected behavior, except when you need leverage to get the child to do something. This is another point here. Like saying, well, remember, there's no movie unless, of course, you do your chores. Well, the fact is, the kids need to do their chores regardless if a movie is involved or not. Don't use that as leverage. Just simply say, look, this is what I expect you to do. This is your responsibility, and I'm going to hold you to this. And as a side point here, but related to what we're talking about, recognize how this principle here also has to do with congregations. The abuse of authority, the arbitrary application of rules by preachers, elders, and other perceived authority figures in regard to discipline or privileges. This is what I'm talking about. For example, a preacher's kid gets special privileges, or perhaps in another scenario, one person does something and we jump all over that person. We say, we've got to discipline them, and we've got to do this, and we've got to do that. And then the elder's child does the exact same thing, and we do nothing. That is exasperating to the congregation. That is not fair. Now we have two sets of rules. We have one for one person, and we have another set for another person, when the fact is we should have uniform standards and expected codes of behavior for all persons. Enough on that. Just at least consider the point. Second thing you can do to exasperate your child, be a hypocrite. In other words, live two different lives. Live one here, or the life that you project to Christians, and live a different one in the privacy of your own home. For example, imagine a father who has two sets of vocabulary. He has a vocabulary that he uses here or among Christians, and then he has a different set of vocabulary that he uses in the privacy of his home with his children. Fathers who swear or gossip or tell raunchy jokes or use worldly language among their children that they would never do otherwise, well, that is this duplicity, this hypocrisy that we're talking about. In Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 4, it says that we're not supposed to practice any filthiness and silly talk or coarse jesting, which are not fitting, but rather the giving of thanks. And that doesn't apply just when we're here assembled as a church service, but rather refers to a lifestyle. And we're not just talking language either. We're also talking attitude or behavior or habits or even a regard for what is holy or what is not holy. And we're not talking about mere silliness here either. A lot of silliness goes on in our house and probably yours too, I would imagine. What we're talking about here is sinfulness and the family's indifference to it, or the family's covering up of that sin. What you're going to find is that children will not only test the boundaries that you set, but they're also going to test the integrity of your own character. And this is not a bad thing in itself. We need to be held accountable. Use this as a positive motivation to do well in all realms of your life, not just those that are being expressed when we come together as Christians. And yet it is exasperating for children when they cannot reconcile the parents that they know at home with the Christian that everyone else knows at church, so to speak. Another thing you could do to exasperate your child is make little or no effort to live according to what you preach to your children. For example, imagine a father who says to his child, "Don't smoke," but he smokes. And the father says, "Don't swear," but the father swears. Or, "Don't be foolish with your finances," but he's foolish with his finances. And, "Don't show partiality and favoritism," but he does these things. And, "Don't lie," but his entire relationship with God is a lie. It is noble and admirable when fathers go to great lengths to instill moral values and work ethic and a fear of God in their children. But you have to realize that this all falls flat on its face when some fathers, or the same fathers, I should say, do not follow their own advice. Matthew chapter 23, for example, Jesus there is talking about the Pharisees who have sat themselves in the seat of Moses. In other words, have made themselves out to be authority figures to the Jews. And Jesus says, do what they say, but don't do what they do. Because they're hypocrites. They're teaching you rightly in the respect that they follow Moses, but they're not following Moses themselves. And so it is that this applies to some fathers. Do what they say, but not what they do. In Romans chapter 2, and starting in verse 17, in following there, Paul starts out in this section, if you bear the name Jew and rely on the law and boast in God and know his will and are instructed by the law and are a confident teacher and so on to other people, well, that's all fine and good, except when you don't follow your own prescription. Verse 21, you therefore who teach another, do you not teach yourself? You who preach that one should not steal, do you steal? You who say that one should not commit adultery, do you commit adultery? You who abhor idols, do you rob temples? You who boast in the law, through your breaking the law, do you dishonor God? For the name of God is blasphemed among the Gentiles because of you, just as it is written. Children might well say to some fathers, you teach me right, but you don't even live according to what you teach me. And the name of God is blasphemed among those children because of what they see in their fathers who live that way. That is exasperating. Now, some children will absorb this glaring contradiction and make it their own lifestyle. In other words, the hypocrisy will be perpetuated into another generation. Other children are just simply disillusioned with it right up front. They are completely exasperated. Neither situation is good. And to avoid this then, whatever moral behavior, we're not talking about just behavior, okay? Like expecting you to conform to a child's behavior or vice versa, but whatever moral behavior you expect of your children, apply that to yourself as well. Here's another thing you can do to exasperate your child. Fail to prepare him or her for life. Not because you can't, but simply because you've abdicated the responsibility. Or perhaps you assume that someone else would take care of that in due time, or maybe you just thought it would happen. It might be that you are just too busy. You're too self-absorbed. You're too focused on your own life. And the children, you know, they interfere with that. They get in the way. And so some fathers are willing to sacrifice their children's souls for the sake of their job or their career or their hobby or their time with their friends and so on. They would never come out and say it that way. I'm going to sacrifice my child's soul. But that's in effect what they are doing. Or perhaps they do not know what to do, but they're too embarrassed to ask. When we say embarrassed in that context, what we really mean is they're just too proud to seek advice and help. And you have to ask yourself, is that in the child's best interests? And it is not. Or there are some fathers who are simply too unrealistic. They have such unreachable, illogical expectations of their children that no child could ever hope to benefit from them. In other words, expecting a 4 or 5 year old to exhibit flawless behavior in all circumstances, or not allowing them to prove their responsibility, to prove the fact that they are going to be responsible. Always telling them how they need to be responsible, but never allowing them to actually prove that to you. That's exasperating. And we're not allowing them to think on their own or to come to their own conclusions, but always filling in the blanks for them, always nurturing them to the point of micromanagement, where you're always doing everything for them and then expecting them to become mature, responsible adults. Or a father says, well, I never had any instruction, and I turned out okay. Really? So you turned out to be a father who does not instruct or inspire his own family, and you don't see anything wrong with that. That's not good. Or there's just the sheer indifferent father who says something, ah, kids, you know, they're tough, they're resilient. Well, that is true. They are tough and resilient, but God holds fathers accountable to bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. That is not an option. That is a command. The point here is that Christian fathers cannot just raise children like they raise horses or hogs or goats, you know, give them some shots, throw them some food, give them some straw, maybe an occasional grooming. It requires time and effort in planning and seeking God's direction, especially through prayer. At the same time, you can't go to the opposite extreme, which is what some parents do, mothers and fathers. They live for their children to the point of sacrificing their own spiritual well-being. In other words, everything they do is for their children, to the point where they actually compromise their own spiritual health in the process. Let's look over here in Psalm chapter 128. I really like this psalm. The picture that it portrays here is very good and very positive, and I hope that you see that. It's a very positive picture. We'll just read the first four verses here. It's part of our scripture reading. How blessed is everyone who fears the Lord, who walks in his ways. When you shall eat of the fruit of your hands, you will be happy, and it will be well with you. Your wife shall be like a fruitful vine within your house, your children like olive plants around your table. Behold, for thus shall the man be blessed who fears the Lord. Hey, look at that picture. It's very positive. What's the imagery there? Fruitful vine, olive plants, productive, producing something there. We might think of fruit of the Spirit in that way. Here, there's something being produced here. And you look at this very positive, very healthy picture. You have to understand that that's not going to happen by accident. And it's not going to happen automatically just because you happen to produce children and are sitting around a dinner table. There's got to be a lot of effort in there. And there's got to be a lot of time that's put into that. In Galatians chapter 6, verse 7, most certainly does apply here. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. Whatever a man sows, thus he will also reap. And what a man sows in his children, so to speak, most likely he's going to reap that. Now, there is a variable there, and that is that the child might turn out well despite the father. We have seen that before in the Bible with certain kings who are very good and turned out very lousy children, and vice versa. Lousy kings who turned out very good children. So it's not absolutely true in this particular case, but what a man sows in his child, most likely he is going to reap. That is something that we should consider here. All right, here's another way that you can exasperate your child. Lead your child to religion without leading him to Christ. It is very common for parents who are converted as adults to church their children, to immerse them in church going, Bible classes, memory verses, singings, potlucks, the rites and the traditions of a given congregation. I'm not saying that any of these things are wrong or bad. I'm just saying that none of them by themselves are sufficient for bringing a child to Christ. These are all good things. But you have to understand that doing these things does not make Christians by itself. Putting a bicycle in a garage does not make it a car. That bicycle needs to be converted and transformed into something much different than what it is. And we can't just be looking at concepts here, like I'm teaching my child the concept of Christianity through these things. We have to turn the concept into a practical reality. In other words, I can't just teach my child about faith. I have to show my child how to live by faith, and I have to show him how he, in particular, is to live by faith. Jesus' spiritual church is not filled with denominations or congregations or churchgoers. It is filled with believers who obey him. I need to teach my children then how to be a believer. You fathers need to teach your children how to be a believer. Not just things to memorize and scriptures to cite, but the actual practical application of what being a believer is. Fathers, then, be careful to teach a relationship with Jesus Christ and not merely an official membership with the congregation. Membership and fellowship are not exactly the same thing. You can be a member of a congregation and not have fellowship with God. Here's something, though. In Acts chapter 8, verse 35, here's Philip going to this Ethiopian in his chariot on the road to Gaza. Philip is instructed to go meet with this man, and he goes up to the chariot and says, "Do you understand what you're reading?" And the eunuch there says, "How can I, unless, of course, someone explains it to me?" And then it says in Acts 8:35, "Then Philip opened his mouth, and beginning from this scripture, he preached church doctrine to him." Well, actually, it's not what it says. It says that he preached Jesus to him. Not church doctrine, but the message of God's redeeming love as borne out through his Son, Jesus Christ. That's what we need to teach our children. Fathers, I ask you, how many of you are preaching Jesus to your children? I'm not saying you can't talk about church doctrine. I'm not talking about an idea that you can't bother with doctrine or spiritual instruction in other areas. But if you're failing to preach Jesus to your children, then you're failing your children. You're exasperating them. What children need to hear is, what's in it for me? They need to see and hear your passion for sound doctrine. That's admirable, but that's not necessarily a top selling point for your children. I know that almost sounds like blasphemy to say that, but what the children need up front is to see a personal connection. A what's in it for me approach up front is not a bad thing. Everybody needs that initially with the gospel. They need to see, what does this do for me? Why should I accept this? And not just in a logical forensic discussion, but rather also this idea of, how can I embrace this as my own conviction? I have seen many fathers with very passionate boldness for sound doctrine and the one true church and apostolic authority, and these things are all very necessary, but not all of these fathers explained or demonstrated to their children the mercy and the grace and the forgiveness of God. And so what they got then, what those children received from their fathers, was a very almost skewered and at least unbalanced perspective. Because God's doctrine is about both of those things. There is the teachings themselves, but there's also the mercy, the grace, the forgiveness. Our children then need both. They need doctrine, and they need a message of redemption. They need to respect God's wrath, but they also need to respect His great love. They need to see your faith, how you got it, why you have it, and how it's demonstrated, but they also need to be taught how to have their own faith. Now, our list for exasperating children certainly could be longer, but I think we get the point. Parents, and especially fathers, cannot abuse or misuse their authority as parents to exasperate their children, to provoke them to anger and discouragement and disillusionment, to overwhelm them with frustration is really what these words mean. Fathers and mothers can be a child's greatest asset and can lead their children into a very productive and rewarding fellowship with God. Or they can lead their children away from the Lord because they poorly misrepresented Him or His word. And what children do with their life after they're out of the home is beyond the father's control. But while they're under his roof, so to speak, that father must be very serious toward imparting spiritual truths and spiritual values toward his children and giving time and opportunity for those children to hear and receive that message. This lesson is not to level accusations against anyone, but rather to explain the scripture. Do not exasperate your children. Do not provoke your children to anger. There is very little direction in the New Testament about parenting specifically, but what is there is extremely valuable. That's why we took the time to look at these passages tonight. Every congregation needs fathers who are fair and just and who are willing to take the time to be good Christian fathers to their children. This finds great favor with God and contributes to any church's success. That's our lesson for this evening. If there's anyone here that needs to respond to the gospel call, this would be the time in our service that you can do so. If you're so inspired to do that, and so moved to do that, then please, won't you come as we stand and sing the song that has been selected?